Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own We're Possessive critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Boyce, Phantom Thread, and A Fantastic Woman. Hi, David. How are you?
Hi. Okay, Joe. How are you doing this week?
I am all right, except that I want to make it The Phantom Thread, and for which I apologize.
Well, whatever you do, don't do that.
No, I won't.
Got to get our titles right around here.
I understand.
Yeah.
All right. So, Boyce.
Well,
Boyce.
Yeah. We'll start off with Boyce. And actually, I've always been a little bit, this is about the great German, or many people consider him a great German artist, Joseph Beuys. And I've always been sort of interested in how the heck do you pronounce that name anyway. And so I really listened carefully in the movie, and I heard more than one pronunciation, even from native German speakers. What I've sort of settled on is sort of saying Boyce. But anyway, that's what it's spelled, of course, for the benefit of everyone not familiar with him, B-E-U-I-S. And he was a very major German artist who specialized in first sculpture, and then later on he became a performance artist. And this is a documentary, and one of the things that this documentary does is to talk about pretty much, I guess, the very wide range of his career, which got into including politics. He died back in the 1980s. He died actually in 86. And he had lived a pretty long and full life, including, among other things, fighting for the Germans in World War II and being a bomber and stuff like that. And then, of course, he came back and he became ferociously anti-Nazi. And near the later part of his career, he was heavily involved with the Green Party in Germany. And people weren't sure for a while whether this was genuine political activism on his part or an extension of his performance art. But it appears to have been genuine political activism. And he was very interested in the idea that art can change society and that art can bring about a more democratic society. And his main way of doing that, contributing to that effort, was to, because he was a very strong believer in democracy, even direct democracy, with everybody casting ballots on everything, which he thought was a good idea. One of the things that he was very heavily involved with throughout his career was just sort of using art as a wrecking ball. And he was, which is to say, just sort of attacking all kinds of establishment things, all kinds of established institutions and attitudes and whatnot. So he did all kinds of art that looks on the surface very bizarre, sometimes really is very bizarre, sometimes it's not so bizarre, or it's peculiar maybe by artistic terms, but not by social terms. For example, a project which plays a pretty large part in the movie called 7,000 Oaks, where the idea was to plant 7,000 oak trees, which, good idea. So he had to raise a lot of money for that, so that gets into a whole other thing. So the movie Boyce gets into these different aspects of his personality and his artistic activity. It gives a whole lot of footage of him in various stages of his career, including when he was fairly young. He was a very troubled man, and there was a while when he dropped completely out of the art world. My big complaint with the movie is that it tells practically nothing about his personal life. You would never know, for example, that he was married for a very long time. There are things that are just never mentioned or barely hinted at in the film. So he, as an artist, you learn quite a lot about him. As a person, you learn a whole lot less about him. But it still is a very, very interesting movie, and it's worth seeking out if you have any interest in contemporary art at all. He was also kind of a groundbreaker in some areas of performance art and so forth. So interesting guy, interesting movie. Boyce, I should say, written and directed by Andres Weil, a German filmmaker. Now let's move on to something which will sound more familiar to many of our listeners, which is Phantom Thread, which is a very big movie and which is in the Oscar race and all of that, and is a movie from Paul Thomas Anderson, which is one reason why it's a sort of a major thing, because he's made a whole lot of very major movies. Some minor movies too, but Boogie Nights, which really was the movie, not his first film, but it sort of launched him, and Magnolia, a very long and intricate film, which is pretty entertaining actually. And then again, well, I want to mention There Will Be Blood, which also starred Daniel Day-Lewis, who is the big star of Phantom Thread, and other films, again, sort of minor films. And I would put phantom thread somewhere in between the major films and the minor films, but it's closer to the major films. It's a pretty impressive piece of work in a whole lot of ways. So this is a movie which takes place in London back in the 1950s. Paul Thomas Anderson is very much an American filmmaker, so it's interesting to see him dealing with a subject in Britain. And Daniel Day-Lewis plays a man with the extremely British-sounding name of Reynolds Woodcock. And he is a dressmaker, and this movie is very much about the world of fashion and about a guy who is very, very major. This main character of ours is a very major player in the world of British fashion and the world of world fashion, I suppose. And he is a very exacting person. He's exacting in his personal life. He's exacting vis-a-vis the people who work for him. And that very much includes his sister, whose name is Cyril. Talk about another very British name. And Cyril is played beautifully by Leslie Manville, is a very, very, she goes beyond being exacting to be sort of super controlled. She's one of these people who you don't think that she's, you sort of think she's thinking over every breath before she takes it and then making sure she takes it exactly right. The character is a bit overdone, but it's an interesting character. So she sort of runs the show for Daniel Day-Lewis's character. She's sort of in charge of the household, and she sort of helps to manage the business. And she's very much the sort of practical person of affairs, whereas Reynolds Woodcock himself is devoted to his art, and he truly is an artist of fashion as a dress designer. He also is obsessed with their late mother, who died quite a while back, and he has visions of her once or twice in the movie. That's not what the movie's about, but that's sort of where the word phantom in the title comes from. And he sews little secret references to her and messages to her and so forth into the inner workings of some of the dresses that he makes. That's just one of his peculiarities. It's not a big deal in the movie, but it's an important little, shall I say, thread running through the film. And what happens very early in Phantom Thread is that, well, you guessed it, he gets a girlfriend. He meets, it's what they call in Hollywood, a cute meet. He meets her in a cute way. She is a waitress. And he is just immediate, and she is played, by the way, by Vicky Creeps. Wonderful performance. And she is just very, very cute. She is just very adorable and very nice. And he instantly has a coup de foudre. He instantly just falls in love with her and wants to see her again, and they start seeing each other again. And it seems like sort of an odd pairing, because he is this absolutely, dedicated and consecrated artist of this very practical kind of art, which is making dresses. And she's a waitress, you know. But no, she's a bright woman and very smart woman, and she certainly thinks he is something very special, and she loves the idea that he makes dresses. And the two of them get together and they become a real couple. And then things go on from there. So in a way, this is sort of an odd couple romance, the dedicated, consecrated artist and the younger waitress. But they do get along, and they do have a pretty long relationship, but after a while they stop getting along quite so well, and problems start to come up in their relationship. The waitress's name, the young woman's name, she stops being a waitress, is Alma, and she and Cyril don't get along that well, and she's very not really familiar with this kind of milieu. And above all, he is obsessed with his art in many good ways, his art of making dresses, which is to say he's excellent at it and he's successful at it, and everybody thinks that he is just a sensational person in his field, and he makes a lot of money and all the things you want to have in your career. But at the same time, he is he just has to have everything around him be exactly the way he wants it to be, to the point where there's one or two pretty fraught scenes that happen because Alma is like putting the butter on her toast at breakfast too noisily. And he must have quiet. Doesn't she realize? He must think. He must always be, you know, he's sitting there reading the paper. And so this, I actually did not think was one of the movie's more inspired touches. That was sort of a thing that used to happen on sitcoms back in the 1950s. This movie takes place in the 1950s. So maybe this was a deliberate choice on Paul Thomas Anderson's part, but I don't exactly think so. It's the kind of thing that quarrels would arise between couples. Stop scraping your toast so loud. That's what drives me crazy about you. And here it is in this movie, taken very seriously. Also, later on in the movie, and this gets fairly, a pretty long movie, well over 2 hours, fairly late in the movie, a plot twist takes place, which involves Alma coming up with genuinely murderous feelings toward Reynolds, who is driving her that crazy after a while. And here we get into things that one or two other recent movies have also dealt with, a kind of a certain kind of murderous intent. And it did not convince me, I felt. Now here the movie is veering over a little bit from very effective drama to melodrama, and I wasn't crazy about that part of it. That said, we have here a it's a pretty interesting story for this kind of romance, you know, the sort of seemingly mismatched couple who turn out to be really pretty mismatched in certain ways. But we have here a movie which is wonderfully acted. Daniel Day-Lewis is just one of the finest actors around, and not every role he does is equally impressive. He gives one of the performances of his career in Paul Thomas Anderson's earlier film, There Will Be Blood, a few years ago. And here he gives another very, very, very different kind of performance, but a very, very strong performance. Vicky Creeps is just wonderful as his younger lover and life partner and muse after a while. And Leslie Manville is very, very fine in this unusual role as the sister, Cyril Woodcock. So a very, very good movie, very involving movie, kind of longer than it needs to be, a few false steps along the way, but overall a movie I can heartily recommend, and I'm very glad that it's getting recognized in the awards races now at the end of the year. I recently got done voting with the National Society of Film Critics, which I used to chair. And the movie didn't win anything, but it came close in some categories. And I find that entirely appropriate. Our third and final movie for today, and A Fantastic Woman. Spanish title, Una Mujer Fantástica, and it is a movie from Chile by the very, very fine Chilean filmmaker Sebastián Lelio, who directed it and wrote it along with Gonzalo Maza, with whom he also co-wrote his previous movie, Gloria, a few years ago. And if you want to see, A Fantastic Woman is a very good movie, as I'm about to reveal, but if you want to see a really superb movie by Sebastián Lelio, see his previous movie, Gloria. Really, really fine movie about a middle-aged woman who finds herself no longer attached and is kind of drifting through the world and having various adventures. And it's a wonderful, beautifully acted, just very, very compelling movie. A Fantastic Woman I didn't find quite that solid, but it's a good film. I've seen it more than once. And in fact, it gets better as you see it more than once. So, it's a good solid piece of work. So that very peculiar title, A Fantastic Woman, refers to its main character whose name is Marina. And the very first thing that happens in the movie, she has an older boyfriend, and she's just moving into his apartment at that moment. She's sort of a youngish woman, and he is pretty much, quite a bit older than her. But they have a good relationship. Obviously, they're extremely affectionate with each other. He's just bought tickets so they can go on this dream vacation they've been planning and thinking of and dreaming of. And he dies. His name is Orlando, and he just dies. And she has to rush him to the hospital before he's dead, and he dies when he's in the hospital. So then, this is the very beginning of the movie. A couple of interesting things happen. When one of the physicians at the hospital asks her name, and she says Marina, he says in a strange sort of a way, that must be a nickname. And you wonder why he says that. He doesn't seem to know her. He doesn't seem to have ever seen her before. So what's going on here? A little bit later on, when police start questioning her, because her poor boyfriend fell down the stairs during his final throes of death, and he's bruised and stuff, and so the police want to talk to Marina. And one of the police looks at her ID and calls her Sir. So is that a slip of the tongue? Is there maybe something wrong with the subtitles of the movie, you know? So anyway, all this is my own sort of long-winded way of building up to something that the movie does in just the very first few minutes of the story, which is we gradually, although not so gradually maybe, come to realize that Marina is transsexual. Marina is a man who has become a woman, apparently not through surgery, but probably through hormone treatments and things like that. We don't learn a whole lot about it, but who is definitely living as a woman. And that is what this movie is about. And since her boyfriend, Orlando, has just died, Marina is mourning him and grieving over him, and this puts her into terrible conflict with most of the members of his family. His brother is very understanding and is a very, very nice man. But the rest of the family, they're somewhat younger, most of them. There's also an ex-wife floating around, and they really, really resent Marina. They feel that Orlando made a terrible mistake getting involved with her at all, much less a transsexual person. And one of them says it's just perversion as far as I can see it, and they will not let Marina grieve her former lover the way that she really wants and needs to grieve and mourn over him. And that is what the movie is about. It's a very sensitive movie. It's a somewhat sentimental movie, but it avoids the traps of over-sentimentality. I found it very, very watchable, wonderfully acted by Daniela Vega, who interestingly is the first openly transsexual major performer in Chile and is right now the front of a whole lot of commercials promoting independent fashion. So really breaking ground for transsexuals and unconventional sexual identities in Chile, and gives a wonderful performance at the center of this movie. So I got three movies that I can talk about this week, Joe, but all of which I enjoy. So I can say that is my very positive story this week.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Voice, Phantom Thread, and A Fantastic Woman.